Welcome to episode 4 of The Mushrooms Apprentice. I'm your host, Shona Holm. I want to share some information on foundational principles of law. So what I'm going to discuss wasn't taught to me in school, and it wasn't taught to anyone else I know, yet this information is fundamental to how to navigate life and also how to navigate the system that we're in from a place of wisdom and empowerment. And anyone who is on a spiritual path will benefit hugely from learning these principles because they come from a high spiritual understanding of how to walk the earth wisely and honorably. My very favorite saying, I collect sayings, my very favorite says, every man has two educations. The first he is given, the second, more important, he gives to himself. Well, this has been my second education, and it has served me well on every level. We all need this understanding today more than ever before. I think it should be clear to anyone with the capacity to think that we are now face to face with a worldwide tyranny of unfathomable proportions. And the great majority of people lack even the most basic understanding of this foundational knowledge. There's a line in the Bible that says, my people perish for lack of knowledge, not because they're not eating right. Ignorance turns people into sitting ducks who are ripe for the picking by opportunistic enemies of truth and the most basic of freedoms. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel of how to conduct ourselves and our lives when we have these timeless principles that have been here all along. We certainly don't need government, universities, and corporate interests to steer, shape, and manipulate our minds, telling us what to think, how to speak, and how to act. People today are being assaulted by the vile spew of corporate media and so-called education that has really crippled common sense and independent thinking. And it gaslights everyone with its incessant brainwashing of lies and nonsense. Well, I have news for you. Truth is obvious, and I have to believe that there are people today who still have the ability to recognize it. So for this first hour, I will mainly focus on the maxims of law, because once you know them, it gives credence to the saying, knowledge is power, because these basic principles of law serve as guiding lights in every area of life, whether we're out in the commercial world or in our private life of family and friends. The maxims are timeless truths that guide our discernment and our actions. If we want to establish some modicum of true enlightenment in ourselves and in society at large, we must preserve the knowledge of these maxims because they've withstood the test of time. There is a maxim that says human nature does not change with time or environment. So these guiding principles are as true for us today as they were 10,000 years ago. And that's the beauty of truth. Truth requires no defense because truth is obvious. And as human nature hasn't changed, these truths serve all people everywhere throughout time. None of what I'm about to share is to be construed as legal advice, by the way. I am discussing eternal principles that inform the mind and the heart and act as the foundation for law at its highest expression. Now, if groups of every kind were peopled with folks who knew their maxims and actually exercised them in their lives, we would have harmony because that would be the reference point for people. These so-called leaders and teachers need to be discussing the maxims of law because most people are bereft of this knowledge. And I can see the lights go on in people when I share these principles. Another maxim of law says, plain truths need not be proved. Well, you hear one and you're like, oh, of course, that makes perfect sense. Yes, that's a maxim. And they come in very handy in this world, especially these days. A number of years ago, I began researching the ancient Druid women, and I discovered that the Druids, who were scholars of the arts, were deeply learned in law, in addition to the other subjects that they were fluent in. And then in ancient Greece, in the forecourt of the Temple of Delphi, there was a pair of pillars inscribed with 147 maxims that were given by the seven sages at that time. And I'm telling you right now, every Delphic priestess knew her maxims because they formed the foundation of how to live life rightly and how to navigate life with common sense and wisdom. Now, there is natural law, which was discussed among the philosophers of Greece. And the definition of natural law is a body of unwritten, universal, and spiritual laws that are intuitive and knowable by simple observation, reason, common sense, and deduction. A line in the Bible says, "By your actions ye shall be known." Well, natural law is considered by some to be the first law or God's law. It's the law of a benevolent and moral creator, and it makes perfect sense. There's no fine print or trickery in natural law. It's based on moral principles of truth, and they are held as intrinsic to we as people. This implies that we understand the difference, most of us, between right and wrong inherently. And we put that into practice by making good decisions and acting morally, so not causing harm to others or trespassing on their earthly rights. I think we can all agree on that. Natural law implies a spiritual connection to God, or you could call that source or creator, however you wish to conceive of that unfathomably profound intelligence. That power is above we the people, and it serves to guide our thoughts and deeds. Now, when a civilization is in decline or in chaos and is being parasited by opportunistic forces, which is happening here and in many other parts of the world right now, the first things to go are the moral principles and traditions that held that society together in harmony. And that is all too plain to see today. So over 10 years ago, I met a man who became a mentor to me on the subject of law. And I was hungry to learn and understand the system we're in because I speak publicly on the subject of mushrooms as healing agents. And I realized that I knew nothing of law. And maybe I better give myself that second education in case I ever found myself in legal trouble. Well, that initial concern birthed a love for learning what I soon discovered is a deeply spiritual subject. Law is found in every facet of life, and to know the foundations of how it works and how to wield its power is essential for navigating the course of one's life. There's an old saying that goes, "He who believes in nothing will fall for anything." Well, we're there. So the more people who educate themselves on these principles and then pass them to our younger generation, the better off we're going to be as a people. Because when you know your maxims, which are founded on logic and reason, you can't be gaslighted. But those in charge of feeding the media and education machine don't want us standing strong. They don't want us holding firm in these principles. They do not want independent critical thinkers who can reason. No, these guys want unquestioning, compliant fools. So you've probably heard the adage, I hope you have, govern yourselves lest ye be governed. Well, that means that if we don't conduct ourselves properly in our commercial and private affairs, someone else will eventually take over the job for us. So it behooves us to be fluent in our understanding of the foundations of law and then how to apply those foundations in our lives. I'm going to read you a quote from the mid-1800s, and this illustrates just what it means if we don't govern ourselves. Quote, "To be governed is to be watched over, inspected, spied on, directed, legislated, regimented, closed in, indoctrinated, preached at, controlled, assessed, evaluated, censored, commanded, all by creatures that have neither the right nor wisdom nor virtue." To be governed means that at every move, operation, or transaction, one is noted, registered, entered in a census, taxed, stamped, priced, assessed, patented, licensed, authorized, recommended, admonished, prevented, reformed, set right, corrected. Government means to be subjected to tribute, trained, ransomed, exploited, monopolized, extorted, pressured, mystified, robbed, all in the name of public utility and the general good. Then, at the first sign of resistance or word of complaint, one is repressed, fined, despised, vexed, pursued, hustled, beaten up, garroted, imprisoned, shot, machine gunned, judged, sentenced, deported, sacrificed, sold, betrayed, and to cap it all, ridiculed, mocked, outraged, and dishonored. That is government. That is its justice and its morality. Oh, human personality, how can it be that you have cowered in such subjection for 60 centuries? End quote. And that was Pierre Joseph Proudhon. He was born in 1809 and died in 1865. So does that sound familiar? All right, so religions have served through the ages as guiding lights. So people have a touchstone for the sacred and the timeless principles that serve to guide and instruct. That said, unfortunately, like any group over time, they get co-opted and corrupted. But the beauty of the maxims of law is their timeless nature as principles of truth. And truth is eternal. Now, our rights come from our Creator, from God, not the Constitution, by the way, not the government, and certainly not a corporation. The Constitution is supposed to uphold our rights and hold our public servants' feet to the fire to ensure they follow that contract. As a people, and by the way, that word people is a very important word in law, we have free will or free agency. So you can think and act as you decide. All right, so we can make decisions for ourselves and act accordingly. However, we can't choose the ultimate results of our decisions. We can't choose the ultimate results of what we think and do. That is governed by law. And so good begets good, evil begets evil, you reap what you sow, as the Bible says. To govern oneself rightly, one must know that they are subject to the discipline of a higher law. And the idea behind a functioning, stable, and healthy society anywhere in the world is that when one governs oneself rightly, guided under the timeless principles of law, they then govern their family in the same way, to where they love and teach and motivate their children to share a common purpose that follows these principles of natural law. So those folks are going to teach their children how to carry themselves ethically and wisely in their society, in the world at large, and ensure that they've developed morals and principles that will serve as their rudder in this vast ocean of life experience. And that then ripples outward to society at large. Now, obviously, that is a long way off from the norm these days, unfortunately. But that's the idea in a healthy society, large or small. So what are these principles that will assist us to live alongside others in a way that ensures we can all agree on the fundamentals and get on with living our lives in harmony? Well, law is ecclesiastical in nature, and I did not know until I began working with my mentor that the Bible is a book of law. So the maxims of law, which are found in the back of Bouvier's Law Dictionary of 1856 in both Latin and English, are derived from the Bible, and they ultimately predate the Bible, which is a collection of these timeless truths. Well, that opened my eyes because I had very negative associations with the Bible based on my Catholic upbringing and years of media propaganda and very badly behaved church leaders. And I saw that book as representative of all of that. Now, of course, I had never actually studied it. And when I speak with the law scholars that I know who've studied the Bible, they bring it to life in a way that I had not previously known. And really, at the end of the day, so many of our quote unquote opinions that we think we have were put there by repetitive media and quote unquote education systems, all of which are designed to co-opt and steer our minds away from truth. And as the saying goes, the truth shall set you free. So my mentor told me I needed to ditch that belief about the Bible because he said I would not glean an understanding of the deeper layers of law without studying the instruction and guidance contained in that book. And biblical law used to be a part of the law school curriculum till about 70 years ago when it was removed. The King James Bible is the version that's used in law. There are a number of versions of the Bible, and the King James is distinct in that it gives explicit notice on the last page of the book that no one is to add anything to the existing text under severe penalty, nor is anyone to take anything away in the text, so that the intention of its meaning can't be manipulated at any time, ever. In this way, it's a reliable source for the foundational tenets of law and commerce. And for those, by the way, who think the Bible has no relevance in this modern world, my current teacher knows people who don't travel with passports, who are able to cross borders with the Bible and their knowledge of it. Now, I am not at that place yet, how I wish I was, but that gives you an idea of just how very relevant that book still is, and not in the way we've been shown by the media. So let's look at a couple of words that have a very similar meaning to the word maxim, just so we know the difference. Those words are axiom and truism. And to look up definitions, by the way, my mentor told me to always consult the older dictionaries, because over time the definitions shrink and sometimes they change dramatically. And we are seeing that in a big way these days. So in addition to the law dictionaries, he had me use Webster's 1828 dictionary, which you can find online, and it gives a very broad fleshing out of the meaning of the words. So an axiom in Webster's 1828 is, one, a self-evident truth or a proposition whose truth is so evident at first sight that no process of reasoning or demonstration can make it plainer, i.e., the whole is greater than the part. And two, an established principle in some art or science, a principle received without the need for more proof. So that is an axiom. The definition for truism is an undoubted or self-evident truth. And this drives home the point that truth requires no defense, because truth is obvious. And that's why these principles have withstood the test of time. So on to the word maxim, and we'll start with Webster's 1828 that states, a maxim is an established principle or proposition, a principle generally received or admitted as true. It is nearly the same in popular usage as axiom is in philosophy and mathematics. And then Bouvier's Law Dictionary of 1856 defines a maxim of law as an established principle or proposition, a principle of law universally admitted as being just and consonant with reason. And two, maxims in law are somewhat like axioms in geometry. They are principles and authorities and part of the general customs of common law of the land and are of the same strength as acts of parliament. And from A Dictionary of Law by William C. Anderson, 1893, one, so-called because its value is the highest and its authority the most reliable, and because it is accepted by all persons at the very highest. And two, the principles and axioms of law, which are general propositions flowing from abstracted reason and not accommodated to times or men, are wisely deposited in the breast of the judges to be applied to such facts as come properly before them. And three, when a principle has been so long practiced and so universally acknowledged as to become a maxim, it is obligatory as part of the law. Then we have Black's Law Dictionary, edition 3, and that states, an established principle or proposition, a principle of law universally admitted as being a correct statement of the law or as agreeable to reason. Koch defines a maxim to be a conclusion of reason. A maxim is a proposition to be of all men confessed and granted without proof, argument, or discourse. And a maxim itself says, a maxim is so called because its dignity is chiefest and its authority most certain, and because it is universally approved by all. Well, one writer I found in my research wrote this of the maxims, and I think this drives home the point very nicely. quote, by themselves, they have the generality, one might say the banality, of simple folk wisdom. Their propositions are memorable only because they give succinct expression to the accumulated wisdom of the ages. They do not tell us anything which we do not, on reflection, already know. They spring to life only when authoritatively applied to some novel situation. That's when you will be very happy to know a certain principle. End quote. Well, the word reason is used quite a bit in relation to maxims of law. And there is another maxim that says, reason is a ray of the divine light. Well, with insanity being the prevailing theme these days, the knowledge and application of these maxims will help to restore reason to our world. Now, let's discuss a few maxims that I know well, because they have been indispensable for how I navigate through life on every level, personal and commercial. There are well over 100 maxims. And of course, I'm just sharing with you a handful of what I think are essential tools. You can look them up by typing in maxims of law, common, ecclesia. And if you want to see them in both English and Latin, look up Bouvier's Law Dictionary. We'll start with my very favorite maxim that says, as a thing is bound, so it is unbound. Well, this maxim has a couple of meanings. It says that no matter how involved the issue, no matter how tight that Gordian knot, there is remedy. There can't not be. We live in duality, and to everything it's opposite. So whatever that problem is, there has to be a solution. It may require serious out-of-the-box thinking, but just as a thing can be bound, so it can be unbound. In law, if you've bound yourself up through contracts, then you can unbind yourself by essentially reverse engineering those processes till you're finally free of the obligations. And there's something called rescission, and I will be discussing that in hour two. The next maxim says, he who does not object appears to agree. When we're given notice of something, whether it's a commercial presentment or something that's going to happen that will affect the community, our silence is known as tacit acquiescence. This is huge to know, because if you ignore a notice or a bill, any kind of commercial presentment, you haven't objected to it. So in appearance, you've agreed. And that can cause all manner of problems for you. There are folks who get something from the tax department and they don't even open it, either out of fear or neglect. And if there's no answer, then there's no objection. So the other side assumes you're in full agreement and are therefore liable. This also applies to being given notice of something that's going to happen. And that something could be a teeny tiny blurb in the paper that says the skies will be sprayed with chemicals for the next 2 weeks, or tall pointy structures are going up in your area. And if you don't object, then it's apparent to folks who put out that notice that no one's objected, so they can steamroll ahead. Now, that's not to say that they will listen to your objections, because anyone with half a brain can see that we are infested with corporate interests that are operating in, shall we say, dishonor, to put it mildly. Well, a similar maxim says, what is expressed renders what is implied silent. We have to communicate, whether commercial or personal. We need to respond and make our intentions known, rather than just hope or expect others will read our mind or hope someone else will take care of it. When we express ourselves clearly and unambiguously, we remove anything that might otherwise be implied. Next maxim says, an unequivocal statement prevails over an implication. Again, more emphasis on the importance of clear, unambiguous communication. Implying is not the same as actual written or spoken dialogue. Next maxim says, a matter must be expressed to be resolved. Well, for an issue to be cleared up, we need to communicate. We need to discuss, to negotiate, whatever's needed to resolve the issue. We can't ignore or put aside commercial presentments like tax notices or bills and hope they'll just magically go away. If there's an issue, whatever the matter, in court, wherever the venue, it requires that we express ourselves. And this is true in business as well as personal situations. This maxim says, he who alleges contradictory things is not to be listened to. Woo, that should ring a bell. That applies to all the players on the world stage in the media these past few years. That is why if you know your maxims, then gaslighting won't work on you, because you will summarily dismiss that person who speaks out of both sides of their mouth or contradicts themselves. When people do that, their words are worthless. Next maxim says, he who fails to assert his rights has none. If we don't know our rights and how to assert them, then we have no rights. And if we sleep on our rights, we lose them. There is a story of a judge who said once to a defendant, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any. Well, it is incumbent on us to know them. Certainly the powers that be aren't going to take you aside at court or at that public hearing and whisper into your ear, hey, here's the list of your inherent rights and how to assert them. No, of course not. If you don't know your rights and how to assert them, you are an ignorant slave and you will be treated as such. And that brings me to the next maxim of law that says, time runs against the slothful and those who neglect their rights. So the foundation of law is notice. If you're going to do something that will affect someone else, you must give notice. And the way that that's done is by the law of three, because three indicates a pattern. There is an understanding that once is an accident, twice is a coincidence, three times is a pattern. So when notice is given, it starts with the first notice. And that notice gives the recipient a certain time, amount of time to respond, say for instance, 14 days. Otherwise, something is going to happen if they don't respond, and that something is stated in the notice. If the recipient doesn't respond in 14 days, then second notice is sent out on day 15, announcing itself as the second notice and delivering the same information and giving the recipient another 14 days, for instance, to respond. And it tells them, if you don't respond, you'll be in default. Well, if the recipient doesn't respond on day 15, the notice of default is sent and the recipient has maybe 3 days to respond. And if they fail to respond, then they are defaulted. And all of that will be in the notice, including what's going to happen if they go into default. Well, if one ignores a notice and allows that notice to go all the way to default, they don't get to turn around after those 31 days and request more time or say they were busy or make up any kind of excuse. They had every opportunity to reply to those notices and make right whatever the issue was. And there's something in law called latches. And latches means that if you were given a certain amount of time to make your claim and you squandered it, you're done. Your excuses are worthless. And also in reference to this maxim, again, to repeat this maxim, time runs against the slothful and those who neglect their rights. Well, if the people of a country sleep on their rights, over time, they will end up with a tyrannical government. This maxim speaks to the danger of complacency, and complacency happens over time when people forget that in order to maintain freedom, one must be vigilant. Because opportunists never go away, and they can be very patient and methodical, and the very best of them are long-term planners. This next maxim is the capstone on this theme, and it says, the law serves the vigilant, not those who sleep on their rights. And on that note, this next maxim says, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Well, we've not been taught these basic principles in our schools, and that's deplorable. But that's what we get for giving over our power to outside interests to, quote unquote, educate our children instead of educating them ourselves. The education system is a government benefit, and we are bearing the egregious disadvantage of accepting that benefit. Well, the principles of law and procedure are out there, and they're easily found. All of this information is available. Just because you haven't been taught doesn't excuse you from not knowing it, especially if you get yourself into a bind commercially, if you want to fight a ticket or refute something, you need to have this knowledge. And ultimately, at the end of the day, these maxims are about personal responsibility. And very sadly, that's a foreign concept these days. The next maxim says, the burden is on he who affirms, not he who denies. And it's also written as, upon the one alleging, not upon him denying, rests the duty of proving. This is really important to know, because if you're putting forth a claim of some nature, the burden is on you to back it up with facts. And we certainly see this in the media, and particularly these last few years, where government and corporations have been making major claims, and the general public at large doesn't demand proof of their claim. And of course, in law, if someone has a claim against you, the burden is on them to prove their claim. If the general public understood this one principle, then all propaganda would fail, because government would be forced to constantly provide proof of their endless battery of claims. The next maxim says, let the deceived be deceived. Well, that doesn't sound very nice, but it reminds me of a scene from The Matrix, where Morpheus and Neo are walking through a big city, and Morpheus points to the throng of people and tells Neo that the crowd is so indoctrinated into the artificial construct of belief through what they've been told since birth that they will never awaken. In fact, they will fight to defend and maintain that construct. Well, there are misguided people who are open and intellectually curious because they can think and reason, and they're open to learning. Then there are misguided people who stubbornly cling to their beliefs and opinions and can get rather aggressive when other people challenge them. With those people, there's nothing you can do other than accept that about them and move on. An old saying goes, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Well, that ultimately is wisdom. And a number of good people have learned that particular maxim these past few years. Here's one everyone should know. Favors from government often carry with them enhanced measures of regulation. Well, again, human nature hasn't changed. And that is oh so true with government. Nothing is free with government. It's like making a deal with the devil. So if it looks like government is somehow showing a kindness, for instance, with those recent gift checks, you can bet your behind there's something attached to that quote unquote favor. Now, when cannabis was legalized, I knew that would not be without all manner of regulations. And those regulations are often designed to put the little guy out of business and reward those on the inside. This is a long time pattern in the nature of government. And this maxim makes that crystal clear. And it's a good one to know so you don't get schnookered by these guys. Here's another similar message. He who accepts the benefit must bear the disadvantage. Do not think that nothing is attached to government or corporate benefits. When you contract with the government and corporate interests, you give over some or all of your rights by accepting those benefits. When we contract for a benefit like a driver's license, for instance, okay, we get to drive the roads without being pulled over for not having plates, but we're also subject to a litany of rules that, if broken, either cost us a lot of money or send us to jail. Nothing is free where benefits or favors are concerned. And this maxim illustrates that this has been known throughout time, which calls to mind the maxim of commerce, caveat emptor, which is Latin for let the buyer beware. Well, this certainly applies to government as well as the marketplace. Another maxim states, what I approve, I do not reject. I cannot approve and reject at the same time. I cannot take the benefit of an instrument and at the same time repudiate it. Well, you can't accept benefits such as licenses, loans, etc., and then argue when you get taxed or fined or called to court for not abiding by the over 60 million statutes connected to your acceptance of those created benefits. Your acceptance approved and confirmed their validity. This is why the Bible says, come out of her, my people, meaning come out of Babylon, or in modern parlance, the Matrix. The commercial system has all manner of benefits for those who desire to partake of that system. But you are then beholden to the onerous and dizzying number of statutes and codes. You're either in the system and subject to its tyranny, or you've separated yourself from it, which of course is not at all easy to do, but all things are possible. And on that note, this maxim of law states, you should know with whom you deal. That is sage advice and something that should be obvious in commerce. We need to do our due diligence on people we're going to do business with, because people get burned by being overly trusting or naive and not exercising discernment. And P.T. Barnum said, there's a sucker born every minute. Well, the shyster and the opportunist are archetypes. And archetypes are immortal in that there will always be shysters and opportunists, just as there will always be heroes and warriors and martyrs, etc. Those are the many faces of human expression. We need to know the nature of the government or the corporation or the organization or the person that we're planning on engaging. These maxims are emphasizing the necessity for personal responsibility, which is why this knowledge is essential, and it should be taught to our children as early as possible. On that note, these two maxims are also very important to bear in mind. Fraud lies hid in general expressions, and a deceiver deals in generals. Okay, what are general expressions? They are the words and terms that we hear every day. Well, words have multiple meanings and contexts, so we need to be sure that the words we read or hear from our public servants are accurately defined by them, because the messages are put before us, but they're not precisely defined as to the meaning of the words used. So there's always room for misunderstanding. And so often that benefits the state or corporation, and it harms the individual who took those words to mean something entirely different and acted accordingly. So fraud is easily accomplished by the use of common words and terms, and they have multiple meanings. And those who write those words know this very well. And we can complain and get angry, or we can grow up and be vigilant in our endeavor to make sure those words are accurately defined. And that's why I look up definitions in the law dictionaries and the older dictionaries, because you get a very different meaning of those words compared to how the general public interprets them today. This next maxim says, usury is odious in law. Well, usury is interest, or it's a stipulation to be paid on a financial loan. Odious means detestable, disgusting, hateful. Well, think of credit card interest rates that are sometimes as high or higher than 25%. That is deplorable. And there are numerous passages in the Bible that say as much on the subject of usury. The next maxim says, the practice of a court is the law of a court. Well, the practices of a court are known as customs. And another maxim of law says, custom is another law. Once a certain way of behaving becomes universally adopted by a society, it's called a custom, and it becomes the expected way of behaving in that society. And in court, there are all manner of customs, and if you don't follow them, you can be reprimanded and even thrown into jail. When one travels to a foreign country, they often encounter different customs. And depending on the country, those customs can be very rigorously enforced, even though they're not written into actual law. Okay, you will laugh when you hear these next three maxims. There ought to be an end of lawsuits. Yes, that's a maxim. And this says it concerns the Commonwealth that there be an end of lawsuits. Yes, indeed. And unbelievably, this maxim that states, it concerns the common good that there be an end of litigation. Well, if we had a population that was versed in the maxims and applied them in their daily dealings, we might not have a need for litigation. These next two maxims would be good to bear in mind as we sink ever deeper into the tech surveillance dystopia. This one says, no one is punished for his thoughts. And the next maxim says, no one is punished for merely thinking of a crime. Well, of course, to think is not the same as to act. How many of us have had the thought of wanting to kill someone we thought was reprehensible? It's one thing to have a thought like that. It's oh so quite another to act on that thought. They are obviously not the same, but we may well have to arm ourselves with those maxims moving forward. This next maxim says, two or more witnesses establishes a fact. This comes from Deuteronomy 19:15, where it says, quote, one witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin, in any sin that he sinneth, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. Okay. Well, when a cop pulls you over and accuses you of speeding, it's your admission that you were speeding that creates the second witness. He just got you to confess on yourself. As well, if you're creating a legal or lawful document, such as an affidavit, which is a sworn statement of truth, you must have it witnessed when you sign it, ultimately by two or three witnesses. Now, of course, we also have notaries, and they're licensed by the state to witness the signing of your document. But traditionally, two or more witnesses would establish your signing or your claim. And that is still true today. No man is bound to accuse himself. This is huge. You cannot be forced to answer questions. That's why we have Miranda rights in place, and they're based on a Supreme Court case. If you're arrested, you're told that anything you say can and will be used against you. They will use whatever you say against you. Well, you were just given notice by that agent that if you start answering questions or running your mouth, you will harm yourself because they'll use that against you. Well, despite the fact that it's in the maxims of law that you're not bound to accuse yourself, we have been conditioned like Pavlov's dog to answer questions throughout our years in the indoctrination centers that we call school. However, you cannot be forced to confess on yourself. Of course, very few people know this these days because very few people even know about the maxims. Government agents and attorneys will use questions to get you to confess on yourself. But the high court itself has ordered us to keep our mouth shut as much as we'd like to answer those questions. Those agents can force you to show up for something, but no one, not one person, can force you to confess on yourself. This is why we have the Fifth Amendment, which protects our silence. This is a big, big deal. And people need to accrue this knowledge instead of watching TikTok videos, for Lord's sake. Another similar maxim of law says no one is bound to arm their adversary. Emphasis again that you are not bound to imperil yourself by assisting an adversary's claims against you, which you do whenever you answer questions. Okay, here are a few maxims on the subject of contracts. And know that contracts are made in different ways. They're written, spoken, or they're created by our actions. This one says, the intention of the party is the soul of the contract. Well, the whole point of a contract is to make an intention known and agreed upon. If there's no intention, there's no contract. The next one says the contract makes the law. Most people don't realize that a contract becomes a law between those who've agreed to it. Contracts supersede the law. Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution makes that clear, saying that states shall not impair the obligation of contracts. Another maxim says the agreement of the parties makes the law of the contract. There is a phrase that says, my word is my bond. A bond is a promise. And when we form a contract with someone and we both agree to it, that agreement is a promise to uphold whatever the conditions of the contract are. So we've made a law between us. And the fact that contracts supersede the law tells you how serious a contract is. In fact, another maxim of law says the agreement of the parties overcomes or prevails against the law. We are born with unalienable rights given to us by our Creator. Well, we have a right to enter into contracts, and that's where we can get ourselves into trouble if we're not careful. When we contract, we give up our rights, either partially or fully, to abide by the conditions of said contract. Contracts are not taken lightly in the system, which is why you can end up in court if you breach that contract. This also calls to mind the maxim I mentioned earlier, you should know with whom you deal. This is another important maxim to know. It is immaterial whether a man gives his assent by words or by acts and deeds. Your actions, your words, and your deeds show whether or not you're contracting or agreeing with another, especially the state. So a handshake is often used to indicate acceptance of an agreement, or standing up in court when the judge enters the room is an agreement that you are acknowledging his or her authority. Also, if arrested, every action on your part indicates your acceptance or rejection of that contractual event. Now, on the subject of contracts, there is a critically, critically important maxim that states, fraud vitiates all contracts. Well, in American Jurisprudence, the second edition, section 8, it states, quote, fraud vitiates every transaction and all contracts. Indeed, the principle is often stated in broad and sweeping language that fraud destroys the validity of everything into which it enters, and that it vitiates the most solemn contracts, documents, and even judgments, end quote. And you should know that there is no statute of limitations on fraud. That should tell you something. Another maxim on that note says, false in one thing, false in everything. Well, if you discover a lie in someone's claim, whether it be someone coming at you or the government or whatever, if there's a lie in their claim, it negates the entire claim, period, the end. False in one thing, false in everything. This maxim speaks to the importance of understanding the meaning of words. And it says, the meaning of words is the spirit of the law. Well, the meaning denotes the intention behind the words, which is why it is critical that we know the precise definition of those words we hear from government agents, legal documents, courts, etc. Words have multiple definitions and contexts. And as the maxim says, their meaning is the very spirit of the law. So we better know what those words mean so we can understand what that law or statute is telling us, which is why it is so very good to have access to law dictionaries like Bouvier's and Black's Law, and also law thesauruses like Burton's and the older dictionaries like Webster's 1828. You can download all of that right off the internet. Well, this makes me think of another maxim under the heading of common sense. And that goes, one is not present unless he understands. A few other maxims on common sense state, when you doubt, do not act. Well, that should be tattooed to the forehead of everyone born under the sign of Aries, which includes yours truly here. Aries can be impulsive. And of course, we're not the only ones who have that trait. Certainly, if something doesn't sound or feel right, then don't move forward with it. Doubt can serve us when it acts as our instinct or sixth sense. It's trying to warn us that something isn't what it appears to be, and further clarification or thought is needed before we act. So to be, quote unquote, hesitant can serve you very well when you're in doubt about something. You might just save yourself from irreversible harm with that very understanding. Another maxim says, it is a fault to meddle with what does not belong to or what does not concern you. Pretty obvious. And then it avails little to know what ought to be done if you do not know how it is to be done. Well, we have no shortage of media pundits out there complaining about what's wrong and what needs to be done, but they never offer actual remedy and how to implement it. And I often wonder if their real job is just to keep the masses feeling righteously frustrated and demoralized, rather than empowering them with truly relevant information that embodies these principles and how to wield them. Just saying. The next maxim says, he who questions well, learns well. Well, I just have to say here that our schools are not encouraging or even teaching how to form a question. In fact, they're shutting down all questioning. Our schools are telling students what to think. They're not teaching them how to think. Someone who thinks asks questions. That is how we learn. And asking questions, by the way, is a sign of intelligence. But we can very clearly see today that most people listen and read without questioning, which results in unquestioning compliance. And that will take an entire society down if it's not corrected. This maxim states, when the words and the mind agree, there is no place for interpretation. Well, okay, this is why it is of the utmost importance to question and ensure we know the precise meaning of the words used in written or verbal contracts and legal documents, so that the parties are then crystal clear on the intention behind those words used and what they're agreeing to. This is why it behooves us to get those words within that legal presentment properly defined by whoever put them in there. The maxims, by the way, are written in both Latin and English, and English is a language of deceit in that, as I've stated, are words of multiple meanings and connotations, whereas Latin is precise. And maxims are often used in legal documents. And when they are, they're expressed in both Latin and English. And that's because the Latin makes crystal clear the precise meaning of the words of that maxim, so that those words cannot be misinterpreted or reinterpreted. And related to that, this maxim states, "He who considers merely the letter of an instrument goes but skin deep into its meaning." In law, an instrument is something in writing, and it will convey the terms of a contract, or it's a statement of fact, or it's a deed, etc. So this is about, again, making darn sure you know the precise meaning of the words used in that instrument or verbal claim. Otherwise, you will not understand what it's really saying. Most people read something and take it at face value and assume they understand the intent and meaning. Any kind of commercial document or words out of the mouth of any agent of the state should be read with a law dictionary or a law thesaurus nearby, so you can understand what those words actually mean and can take whatever appropriate action is needed. And that action might just be a simple reply requesting that they define those words to the exact meaning that they're intending before you accept their offer. That's just common sense, I think. Another maxim says, words are to be taken most strongly against him who uses them. Well, okay, we have to be responsible with how we communicate, and especially in legal matters, because if we make statements or claims or answer questions, our words can come back to haunt us. We want to be very careful about what we say and how we say it. Another maxim says, he who does not right a wrong when he can is seen as commanding it. It's also expressed as, he who does not forbid a crime while he may sanctions it. And another way this maxim is written is, he condones who does not denounce, he commands who does not forbid. Well, an old saying goes, evil thrives when good men do nothing. So this maxim calls us to action, to do the right thing when we witness a wrong. Now, to that, there are these maxims that say, he is clear of blame who knows but cannot prevent, and no guilt attaches to him who is compelled to obey. Now, this maxim states, punishment is due if the words of an oath be false. Well, oaths are not taken lightly, and there's a long history of initiates who took oaths under penalty of death. Here is the Webster's 1828 definition of an oath, quote, a solemn affirmation or declaration made with an appeal to God for the truth of what is affirmed. The appeal to God in an oath implies that the person imprecates his vengeance and renounces his favor if the declaration is false, or if the declaration is a promise, the person invokes the vengeance of God if he should not fulfill it. A false oath is called perjury, end quote. Let's finish with a few maxims on consent. This system we're in harvests our consent through licenses and registrations. And once we sign on the dotted line, we are agreeing to all the adhesion contracts that come with that license. The system also puts pressure on its citizens by taking away benefits and privileges and inciting groupthink so that the citizens police themselves. I'm sure that sounds familiar. This maxim states, to him consenting, no injury is done. Another maxim says, he who consents cannot receive an injury. And yet another maxim says, consent removes or obviates a mistake. These maxims are telling us we need to be clear-minded and discerning about what we are consenting to. And that's why informed consent is so important. But people are not receiving informed consent these days. And we cannot assume we're going to be given it, given a full disclosure of it, just because we think that doctor or lawyer, etc., is trustworthy. That's the way a child thinks. These maxims make it crystal clear that we must exercise personal responsibility, and it's incumbent on us to do our due diligence and ask questions and research thoroughly, always going beyond the claims they are making so we can get the full picture before we agree to anything. That is basic common sense. Now, there is something called willful ignorance, and people who refuse to question or look deeper into an issue do not get a pass later. They have only themselves to blame for their foolishness. And finally, this next maxim I think is relevant for a number of people out there these days, and it says, an act done by me against my will is not my act. So if someone is forced to commit an act that they are opposed to, that is not their act, and whoever forced them into it is liable. Okay, I've shared really just a handful of what is a very long list of essential and timeless principles that are designed to guide us wisely. These principles form the foundation of knowing how to navigate the world with clarity and wisdom. Now, that's not to say that all you have to do is recite a maxim and you're good to go. No, but in order to navigate in life, whether it's public or private, we need to have a foundation of these principles, or we'll fall prey to the egregious manipulation that we see playing out today. We perish for our lack of knowledge and common sense. When you truly know and understand the maxims, you can utilize them in your everyday dealings, and that will serve you very well. You will be standing in the light of truth and reason, and that will take you a long way. We have got to have our wits about us in this world, and we must always question what is claimed, especially when it comes from governments and corporations. There is a quote by Samuel Adams that says, quote, no people will tamely surrender their liberties, nor can any be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved. On the contrary, when people are universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink under their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders. End quote. Well, this is the kind of information I think that homeschoolers should be teaching their children if they're not already doing so. If I had this knowledge when my daughters were young, I would have made darn sure they knew their maxims. Societies around the world through history raised their children with parables, and those parables held a moral of the story so that in that way, their offspring had a foundation of how to navigate their world. A great example of that is Aesop's fables, which were stories with animal characters, and they would appeal, of course, to children, and every fable had an axiom or a moral of the story. Well, if you have small children, Aesop's fables would be an excellent addition to your teachings as a mother or father. Can you imagine how empowered children would be if they grew up with a full understanding of these principles and how to wield them? Very different world we would be living in if that were the case. I will leave you with this last maxim that says, human things never prosper when divine things are neglected. So I will finish here, and you can head to themushroomsapprentice.com, where you can purchase a monthly subscription to access the full 2-hour episodes. And I have a lot more to say on this subject. Sláinte.